If you are soft, if you're implementing demands of Vladimir Putin, he will have more demands. They will never end. So you have to be strong. He understands only the language of power.
Despite weeks of escalating tensions, the invasion of Ukraine by Russian forces in the early hours of 24th of February shocked the world. Just days earlier, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced he was recognising the rebel-controlled areas of Donetsk and Luhansk as independent states. Up to that point, a full-scale invasion had seemed almost inconceivable, but suddenly Europe was faced with its largest conflict since the Second World War. In this Global Insight podcast, we look at the background to the Ukraine crisis, Russia's hybrid warfare campaign, and the role of sanctions in fighting aggression and autocracy. First, we speak to Olga Leutman, an expert in Russia, Ukraine, and Eastern Europe, and a senior fellow at the Centre for European Policy Analysis. Although the Russian military build-up began in November, she says the indications of something more sinister can be traced back to even before the annexation of Crimea in 2014.
Putin has had this military strategic goal of taking Ukraine, or at least parts of Ukraine. He's already invaded Ukraine and occupies 7% of the country. So it kind of started last year and in the spring. And sometime around this fall is when he decided to, which the Kremlin is excellent at, bring this narrative of, oh, suddenly we have a fear of NATO expansion. And you saw from the negotiations and even from the demands, they came in with the most mockingly unrealistic demands. I mean, roll back to 1997. No one's going to do that. So they walked in bad faith. They never wanted these, negotiations to work out. They just wanted a pretext and at the same time a distraction, because while everyone is having these negotiations, the only thing that's been happening is you see more troops arriving, more military equipment, blood supplies arriving. There hasn't been a pause. Now, one time during these negotiations, all you see is an increase and an influx of military. One of the most important things to understand about Ukraine is that it has been Putin's literally hybrid warfare laboratory. Every single thing you have seen, from capture of politicians, economic capture, cyber attacks, disinformation, division operations, everything you have seen in the West in one form or another was practiced there for years, even before the invasion.
Bill Broider is CEO of Hermitage Capital Management and a longtime supporter of stronger sanctions against Russia. He says Western nations missed numerous opportunities to protect Ukraine.
Well, I think what we're seeing is the reaction to 20 years of inaction. Russians came to London. They loved coming to London with all of their money because there was a property rights, rule of law, and nobody was going to ask any questions. And so London has become the money laundering capital of the world for the Russians. And now, all of a sudden, we're everybody in the world is seeing the price of this lax attitude, which is it emboldened and financed Putin to do terrible, terrible things. And the invasion of Ukraine, I'm afraid, is just the beginning of a string of terrible things that he's going to do in the future.
Broider argues that targeted sanctions should have been imposed much earlier to avert a Russian invasion.
Putin looked at all the past reaction to his atrocities. He looked at what happened after Georgia, nothing. He looked at what happened after invading Crimea, nothing. He looked at what happened after shooting down MH17, nothing. He looked at what happened with the Salisbury poisoning, nothing. And so he was assuming that nothing would happen when he went to Ukraine. And if we had done some really aggressive targeted sanctions in advance of him going into Ukraine, which is one of the things I was suggesting, he would have seen that there would be something happening and he might not have gone through with it. We have to raise the price in every way possible, economically, financially, on Vladimir Putin. We have no choice. We have to do that, because if we don't, then he's going to carry on in further towards us, towards the borders of NATO. I don't think it's the best tool to go after broad sanctions to sanction people in Russia. But he didn't leave us with any choice. And I believe that the Russian people are just as much victims of Vladimir Putin as the Ukrainians and everyone else. But we're kind of stuck now. He started a war, and we don't want to fight a physical war, so we have to fight a financial war. He looks at the reward of doing this, and the reward, in my opinion, is that it allows him to stay in power. I think he's worried about not being in power, and he doesn't think that a wartime president can be overthrown. And then he's got to look at the risks of this. And what are the risks? The risks are military risks. And then he's already experienced a lot of them. I mean, it's actually shocking how well the Ukrainians are doing given the unbelievable firepower of the Russians. And he's also looking at the financial risks. And that's where we come in. We can create really devastating financial risks. And we shouldn't pull any punches at all at this point. It's a war. And everything is open in a war.
Reuter has been pushing for governments worldwide to enact legislation to clamp down on enablers who help Russian oligarchs launder so-called dirty money abroad. In Kyiv, Daria Kaleniuk, executive director and co-founder of the Anti-Corruption Action Centre, says Ukraine has been carving its own pathway to democratic reform, but that global powers must do more to keep Russia in check.
Well, we are building independent anti-corruption institutions and rule of law institutions, because corruption has roots in both countries, in transition democracies, but also in well-established democracies. Therefore, our key focus is on advocating for important anti-corruption changes in Ukraine. We also advocate for certain changes internationally, particularly we are supporting the campaign on regulating enablers, including lawyers, but also real estate agents, auditors across Western countries, in the EU member states, but also in the United States.
Kaleniuk agrees that targeted sanctions should be used against the Kremlin and oligarchs connected to the Russian authorities.
We are also advocating for imposing personal sanctions against corrupt officials and their family members, not only from Ukraine, but also from Russia. And now, particularly in this situation, we are supporting the call from Russian activists and opposition politician Navalny on the need to sanction the Putin inner circle, his oligarchs, who are the holders of his wealth across the key NATO member states, who are now are actually providing weapons to Ukraine to fight and to deter Putin's aggression. I believe that this will be the most effective way in terms of sanctions policy towards Russia. And sanction in particular projects, which goal is not business, but which goal is actually getting more money to the Kremlin regime and getting more strategic corruption tools for Kremlin to impose its leverage over the West. And particularly, I'm talking about Nord Stream 2. I think that it was the mistake of Biden administration to lift those sanctions. I think that encouraged Vladimir Putin to go further. If you are soft, if you're implementing demands of Vladimir Putin, he will have more demands. They will never end. So you have to be strong. He understands only the language of power.
Leuchtman says Putin's regime has effectively weaponized Europe's energy supply to destabilize the continent.
Germany should have understood that they need to find an alternative to their energy supply, because you cannot be put into a situation where you are held hostage and you cannot properly respond because you're reliant on gas. I have said that Putin has started this with his military strategic goals, and he started putting the operation in place last February. But what people fail to realize is that in August, you saw through Belarus, Lukashenko, who's now his newest proxy, weaponizing migrants. in order to destabilize European borders. You saw the weaponization of energy in order to, you know, frighten Europe, who is going into a cold winter, that they're going to be paying through the roof. And the regular citizens inside the country, they're the ones who are going to be paying. They don't care who's causing it, how it's being caused. All they care is that they see a 60% increase in their energy bill. So Putin, again, was using these tactics of weaponizing energy to destabilize Europe. And this is something that the West really needs to understand, because I understand we're for capitalism and, you know, and free trade and cooperation. In this situation, you cannot assist Russia when it comes against our national security interests. And our, I mean, by United States, I mean, by England, by Germany, by, you know, every European country.
Galeniak says the 2014 Orange Revolution and subsequent ousting of President Viktor Yanukovych demonstrated Ukrainian determination to fight corruption. Today, she says Ukrainians are united in their resolve to ensure history is on the side of democracy.
Ukrainian people are fighting, these attempts, constant attempts of Russia and Kremlin regime to get us back under their influence. Ukrainian people 8 years ago said very clearly and firmly that we are for dignity, we are for justice, we are against corruption, we are for Western values, which are grounded on liberty and on dignity and on the respect on human rights and on the rights of other people. But I think that Ukrainian people more and more understand who is our enemy. And if you look into the social polls, the support of Ukraine entering NATO grows. We have historic numbers, and it's been supported by Russian-speaking people in the south and east of Ukraine, whom Vladimir Putin wants to protect. We believe, despite all the difficulties of our work, that Ukraine brings innovative solutions to these standard problems of corruption and rule of law, which can inspire other countries and other transition democracies. Therefore, the fight for Ukraine is so important, because if we are successful, we send the message that democracy can win, that democracy is better than autocracy. That's actually what is threatening Vladimir Putin. He doesn't need this success story for the world.